I'm not saying don't be scared by what you
say. I wouldn't say anything to Mike Tyson.
Yeah, don't.
I'd just be like, look, I'd be sitting like this, bro.
Yeah.
You are now listening to the Duo Sports and Stuff Podcast. Here are your hosts, Deontay Epps and Dane Beasley.
Hello and welcome to episode 14. 14 episodes, Dane, of the Duo Sports and Stuff Podcast. It is a nice sunny day after last night's storms that came through. Did y'all get a lot of rain up there, bro?
We got some rain two nights in a row. But it wasn't as bad as, was it 2 days ago when we had some hail and some loud, some really, really, really loud thunderstorms. So, you know, the Dallas area, you probably know what I'm talking about. It was about quarter size hail. It wasn't too big, but it was big enough to make you like the next day go check and make sure your car windshields are straight. So it was cool, though.
Yeah.
We good now.
I hear you. That's good. That's good, man. Yeah, I slept through all the storms. Apparently, it hailed out here. Karina woke up like two or three times out of the
reckless, night. Man.
Man, that's kind of bad. Like I didn't hear anything, but we hope that you guys are continuing to stay safe during this quarantine time, and you know, getting everything you need to get done as well, and trying to push forward as best as you can. Us here, you know, we're in our house, as you can see, doing what we have to do in our personal lives, but also trying to give you this content that we enjoy, the things that we like to do, and bring it to you on this type of platform where we talk sports and other cool and exciting things. And so we welcome you to our humble abode here. Yeah. So last episode, Dane, we had some issues or concerns about how the NFL draft would go as far as working virtually. I think right as we were recording last week, they were going through or about to go through the testing phase that Monday before the draft. Mm-hmm. And there was a, you know, certain hiccups here and there. But the draft came and went this past weekend. From what I saw, maybe Dane, you saw some things different. It looked good to me virtually. No hiccups that I could see on screen. Trey Wingo hosting it, Baylor alum, Sikkim. He did a heck of a job putting together this, you know, hosting it. You know, I had to hook up my boy Trey.
Shameless plug. Gotcha.
Yeah, you know. But, you know, he put on as a host, he was great. And they did a combination of ESPN analysts and NFL Network analysts, which was pretty cool. And then I actually didn't get to check it out, but I think you did, Dane. The College Game Day guys talked about the first round picks and stuff like that. Did you get to watch that?
Yeah, I watched a little bit of it.
Okay. So apparently that went pretty well, too.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good. I love seeing those personalities. It's one thing seeing those personalities on set together, but it's another thing when you have another element as far as the distance. So it was cool getting to see them like, okay, there's you got to humanize a lot of those people, you know, even more than what you already are. Hopefully you humanize them more than you already did just by seeing them, you know, in their comfortable in their own home. Not to say that they're not comfortable on set, but there's a different element to that level of, you know, speaking to something or passionately talking about something versus, you know, being outside or in a controlled environment with other, you know, audience members. So it was kind of cool. I appreciated it.
Right. I agree. And we can even go to you talk about humanizing the analysts, and even they showed, of course, everything was virtual. So they showed every draft room, per se, of each team and the general manager, head coach, and you see them with their families, their close ones at home. Seemed like almost every person on staff that they show for each team had their kids there, or you know,
either voluntarily or involuntarily. Yes,
except if you're Cliff Kingsbury and you're, you know, you're living the bachelor life, and you just kick back with the perfect setting. Man, that guy.
Or if you're Jerry Jones and you're sitting on your yacht. Just flexing.
But to see that, you know, seeing them around their families, their friends, but also, you know, doing important things. You see them working. Mm-hmm. You see them on the phone. You see kind of the behind the scenes look of the draft process. I will give that a win for the NFL, ESPN, NFL Network. The stats came in for the ratings, and they got 55 million on the viewership, which, you know, a lot of people can say, well, there's nothing else on TV, but I mean, there
you
is.
You could have been watching something else. You can watch,
right. You can watch something else. Sports-wise, of course, you know, this is real time going on, but you didn't have the option. You had the option to watch what you wanted to watch.
True.
So, I mean, I kind of see what they're saying, but at the same time, you had an option. You had a choice to make whether you wanted to watch it or not. One gripe, Dane, you and I talked about, and I'm going to let you kind of go into it, was we see it every year kind of as far as, you know, when there's a draft pick and, you know, break down their stats, where they come from, all that kind of stuff. But we've kind of seen it more this year about, how can I say it?
Tragedy.
Their history. Tragedy. Yeah. And I had a discussion about this with some of my close friends, but I'm going to let you talk about that.
Man, so you have – at first, I was, okay, this is maybe a coincidence the first time it happened. And ideally, you would anticipate that on someone's biggest night or one of their most successful, memorable nights, they remember it for the reason why they're there. You know, one of the reasons why they're there because of their athletic accomplishments and things of that sort. Not to say that their personal life doesn't affect or make them who they are, but to try to highlight that when there's so many other things that you can talk about as a professional, it's very unprofessional. What I mean by that is, for example, you might have a gentleman who's one of the smartest people on their team or in their conference. So it'll be highlighted there, you know, all Big 12. Academically, and then of course they'll list top three Heisman finalists 3 years in a row, and then you'll see something like was a four sport athlete, was drafted in the minor leagues, you know, at the age of 18, and then right below that, something way out of left field, mother was on crack for 12 years. Like, that's a fact, but
yeah,
it's one thing. Yes, you more than likely got the consent of the player to put that information up there. I understand that. I get that. There might be even some players that are okay with having that information up there, but anybody who's anybody who can humanize somebody, who's capable of humanizing somebody, can agree that that's in bad taste. It sheds a bad light on that person. And why does that? There are so many other things you could talk about. And a lot of people can relate to a lot of the stories, a lot of these things that build that can build the character of a person, but it shouldn't be the person's footnote that should be associated with them on a night like that. But
I
got mixed feelings about it, just because I mean, we all have, you know, personal tragedy and things that we have to overcome. But I personally, we'd have to fight. You put something up there on the screen, you know, about my mom passing, in the midst of, you know, me celebrating being drafted by, you know, anybody, we're going to fight.
Right.
There's just I don't think it'd be a situation where that person is. I don't think it'd be a situation where the person would be super uncomfortable, but it's not one of those things that people want to be thrown around all the time. You know, like there's just an element of, or a line that shouldn't be crossed like that. But, and I don't know, maybe they just wanted to highlight, well, this young man survived, you know, all of this, surely you can too. And it's just like, just a level of pulling yourself up by your bootstraps that I do not approve of and appreciate. So
I'm glad you said that, because I talked with Eric and Keith on Twitter, and that last thing you said about, you know, he's gone through all this, maybe you can too. That was the argument Keith was saying as far as them trying to, you know, big up their tragedy, tragedies and things that they went through. He was also agreeing with us, like, that's kind of like, it's a line there that you have to cross or you don't want to cross. Right. And it seemed more this year than any other draft because they've done this before.
Oh, where
they
brought up,
they brought up the pass and stuff. And we mainly saw it with prospects themselves that went through stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, they got arrested or they got kicked off the team, stuff like that.
Yeah.
We've seen that. But I don't ever remember, Dane, them going.
Oh, my bad.
I was just going to say, I don't remember them ever going in depth on, like, things outside of their control as far as, like, family members, people in their circle, stuff like that. And but, yeah, like you were about to say, character issues they brought up, which,
I get that a little bit. A little bit. Yeah. I can understand because it highlights the person's willingness or how much they care about the sport. If they can handle themselves on the field professionally and they can handle themselves off the field professionally, I get that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some stuff is like you shouldn't even touch with a 10-foot pole. Like it's just some of it's just very distasteful.
But you know what's crazy? This is like this goes all the way back to like social norms. I'm going kind of deep.
Go ahead.
I saw a tweet. I think Tyrann Mathieu retweeted it about it was showing after he got drafted mm-hmm. how Bill Polian said, do you remember Bill Polian?
Oh yeah. Oh, how could I not?
Yeah. So Bill Polian, former executive, front office guy in the league. Somehow. He was a draft analyst. He's made a bunch of different comments over draft picks over the years that came out to be wrong.
Very wrong.
This particular one, he was talking about Tyrann Mathieu and how if he was a GM on the team, he wouldn't even be on the board. He's not a team player. He hasn't shown signs of leadership and stuff like that. And then, you know, Tyrann Mathieu retweeted it and I don't have it in front of me, but he was talking about how all these things he's done in the community, all mm-hmm. these things he's done for the team. I was voted team captain. I was voted team MVP. He won a Super Bowl last year with the Chiefs. So it just goes to show you, like, don't judge a book by a cover. And, you know, don't judge people by their past because people change. People grow up. These kids are college. I mean, they're still growing up. Their brain hasn't developed yet. So, I mean, of course, they made bad decisions,
right.
You know, in college. But give them a chance to grow. Give them a chance to understand their mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
Give them the chance to do better in the future.
And ride on the coattail of that point. As you're saying brother. That, you said one thing in particular that stood out to me about analysts and even people, normal people, internet people like you and myself, saying things online about people who we've never met, have no intention of meeting, and otherwise probably wouldn't say it if we were in their face. If you say something online, or if you say something in a platform like that, like Bill Polian did, more than likely, you probably wouldn't say that if that person was sitting right next to you or in front of you. So my advice to you, if you were listening, don't say something online or, you know, in a setting like that, that you wouldn't say if you're saying it to Mike Tyson, and he's sitting in front of you. Now, I'm not saying don't be scared by what you say.
I wouldn't say anything to Mike Tyson.
Yeah, don't.
I'd just be like, well, I'd be sitting like this, bro.
Yeah. If you couldn't say it and address it as if it was Mike Tyson himself in person, I probably wouldn't say it at all because some of that stuff is unnecessary. Calling a man out, you know, based on his character, you've never met a person, and that's just crossing a whole line.
You could argue that's their job, but at the same time, you gotta just.
This comes with a level of professionalism.
Yeah, man.
It comes with a level of professionalism.
At least back it up with the, you know, give this guy a chance to grow, give this guy a chance to change, stuff like that. But it is what it is. And
that's just where we are. But, you know, they're athletes. They're in, you know, they've been in the spotlight probably since they were in middle school. So they understand the territory that comes with it. However, that doesn't mean that you should treat them like they're not. That doesn't mean they should be treated like they're not human because they are human.
Yeah.
So obviously they're game. But yeah, so that was pretty interesting. There was a lot of amazing moments during the night of the draft, not to be, you know, highlighted, or we shouldn't highlight just all the negative. I mean, I'm not saying I am, but of course we just went on a tangent about proper etiquette and things like that. but there are a lot of pretty good highlights as far as, you know, reactions and team fits and all that good stuff. So, like, what? Speak first on. I want to hear your perspective because we haven't talked about it. I'm kind of. Yeah, we haven't really talked about it at all.
No.
How do you feel about the Broncos selections? There are a few that you guys made. I was like, oh, man. I want to see what he has to say about this.
So I'm happy. We got for those that don't know, I'm a Broncos fan. I've said it a lot of times on the pod. And some of the things we talked about previously on the other episode was draft needs. Previously on the duo. We got a receiver. We got two receivers.
Mm-hmm.
Our first two picks.
Actually, three receivers.
You know,
who's counting?
Three. Yeah. But Drew Lock. Let's first start with Drew Lock here. We drafted Drew Lock last year in the second round.
Mm-hmm.
He got hurt early in the preseason, so he didn't play at all. So we were stuck with Flacco. We were stuck with
You don't have to follow that with anything else. You just say,
yeah.
The first sentence should be, and the first and last sentence is, we had Joe Flacco. That is it.
Yes, exactly.
That works in every year.
Drew Lock came in last five games, led us to a 4-1 record. Ball. So we rolling with Drew. We got to get Drew weapons. We lost Emmanuel Sanders last year in a trade. Basically, it was just my boy Cortland Sutton out there balling. Noah Fant came on late. Early, he was shaky. He came on late, but he's a weapon too. So we gotta get Drew Lock weapons. We settled that with speed. We signed Melvin Gordon in the offseason to compliment Philip Lindsay.
Right.
Draft, we got Jerry Jeudy, speedster, can run routes, can catch. Mm-hmm. I'm so excited about Jerry Jeudy. We got KJ Hamler, another speedster. We got speed, which I'm happy about. I hope that, you know, these guys can groom and learn together.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited to see, you know, they're very young still, so it might take, you know, a few games to get grooving, maybe even a whole season to get fully groomed.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm excited to see the future of the offense, the Broncos offense. We got our center,
Cushenberry
from LSU. He's going to be starting day one.
Yeah, that was a steal.
One thing that I'm still shaky on that we did not settle is that left tackle position. We didn't draft one. Elway said it's going to be a competition between Bowles and Wilkinson, which I'm hoping Wilkinson.
He said, look, we got you all. You pulled your quarterback in the office. Look, we don't know what we're going to do about protection. However, in the 1.3 seconds that you have after you receive the ball, you have so many options. Just don't die between between the cadence and receiving the ball. You should be fine.
And one thing I will say about Bowles, he gave me a headache last year. But towards the end of the year when Drew Lock came and started, he did better. And I think that's because Drew Lock can run a little bit. Yeah. Flacco is like a statue. So
no mobility.
Drew Lock can continue to – right. Having that mobility helps out the line. So if he finishes or starts the season the way he finished last year, I'd be okay with it. But I hope down the line we can still address that position.
Still a lot of time left. There's still a lot of time left. There's still some pretty decent free agents out there. I mean, defensive-wise,
We got Albert O from Missouri, Drew Lock's old buddy in college, fastest tight end in the combine.
Red zone machine right there, bro.
Yeah. Hopefully, you know, he can come in and help us out on the offensive side. But we got a couple of other guys in here, too. Corner, Michael O from Iowa. I won't say his name because I can't say it. For the most part, man, I'm happy with what we got. We got some defenders to shore up that Chris Harris, because Chris Harris is gone. So we got A.J. Boye coming in. Hopefully Callahan can play down. He didn't play at all last year. But overall, I'm happy, man. I'm really happy about how things came out. So we got the extra playoff spot in the AFC, so maybe we can snag that. But how about them Cowboys?
Mm. Oh, let me help you out with Mike's last name. I got you. Just so if you want to know how to pronounce his last name, just think of Just think of OJ, okay? Football OJ, not off-field OJ. So it's, just say it with me. O.
O.
J.
J.
Moo.
Moo.
D.
D. OJ Madua.
OJ Mudia. OJ. Ah. OJ Mudia. OJ Mudia. So say it like five times fast, because there are going to be a lot of people that say my man's name wrong. He's me, Nigerian. I will. Yeah, he's a Nigerian brother, so make sure you get that name right. You know what I'm saying? It means a lot to people. If you want to be respectful and mindful of them, you get their name right. You want people to call your name right. So it's a person who sure. people get my name wrong all the time. So I always have to be, you know, polite and stern and be like, hey, it's Dane. It's not Dana. It's not Dante. It's not James. Dane. Sorry, that came out of somewhere personal deep down inside. But OJ Moody. So the Dallas Cowboys. Wow. The consensus, my consensus, I did 7 mock drafts leading up to draft day.
And you were posting them on Twitter.
Posting them every day just to, you know, just because anything could happen. There's only one scenario that I had with a receiver, a top 3 receiver, falling to the Cowboys, and that was with actually Jerry Jeudy. I had no idea that CeeDee Lamb was going to fall at 17. But when I seen he made it past 10 and then 12, I was like, okay, this might be a real thing. The Cowboys have had a rich history in reaching for their draft picks. By that, I mean, instead of drafting the best player available, most of the time what they've done is they drafted at a particular position of need, even though that particular player wasn't the best player available. Now, when you're drafting, when you have a first round pick, you want to make sure you get the bang for your buck. And by doing that, you pick the best person available. Well, anybody knows that our scheme and or our defense is horrible. I'm going to go out on the record and say the scheme and the defense was horrible last year. So with that being said, I assumed that we were going to go with the defensive player. Now on the board at 17, I thought we were going to go with Chaisson, which I'd be cool with. Right. This is the day before the draft. Now when it got to 17, the day of the draft, I was like, you know what? Woo! Another receiver wouldn't be too bad right now, especially someone is, you know, NFL ready as CeeDee Lamb. So we went Lamb at 17, and I was super excited. Definitely would never have predicted that he would have fallen that far, but we feel the need as a third receiver slot. You know, he can play all 3 positions. He's a great route runner. He doesn't have, you know, super breakaway speed, but the quickness off the line and knowing how to get open, knowing when to get open and getting open is what he does well. And then, of course, after the catch, many of you Baylor fans, you should know about him after the catch as well as UT fans.
Unfortunately, we do.
Yeah, so we handled that need, maybe get Dak some more weapons that way. So he had plenty last year, but see how that played out. But they did address the defense with the remainder of the draft picks, or with the exception of 2 of the remaining draft picks. They went long, their corners, they targeted long athletic corners. So I guess the prototype they might have had in mind was like Aqib Talib or your Antonio Rodgers Cromartie type build. Cause that's the body type that kept coming up. You know, when they drafted Trevon Diggs and then when they drafted Reggie Robinson II, they got some dogs on the line. They got Neville Gallimore out of Oklahoma and then
about that guy.
Oh, yeah. That dude. So I didn't realize the earlier years, and correct me if I'm wrong, Sooner fans, some of what I've heard from Oklahoma Twitter was that he was the main reason why he wasn't as productive as he was in his final year in Oklahoma is because he was playing in a scheme or they was playing basically playing out of position. He was being asked to do certain things that, you know, they weren't necessarily speaking to his strengths. So his final year playing a different role on the team, he was able to produce a little bit better. So I haven't gone back and looked at the guy's film or anything like that, but I'm excited to have a bigger body down there because we typically, our draft motto for defensive linemen has always been the smaller, quicker guys. And I never understood getting 285-pound tackles. Like, I never understood that. No offense to the smaller, undersized defensive tackles, but the game of football, everybody knows it always starts in the trenches. You getting blown off the line like we did in the playoffs versus the Rams 2 years ago, then it's definitely not going to be answer the problem. So, and then of course, the probably my favorite pick of the entire night was the defensive end out of Utah, Bradley and I. He, you know, has their sack record, and he's very, 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 very aggressive. So I think we're missing that from that opposite end of Tank. So
yeah,
I'm excited.
It seemed like both of our squads, you know, did what we wanted them to do.
Yeah, which is shocking. I can't remember the last time it's happened like that since like 2010. That both teams drafted the way that they were supposed to, like the same year. Because that was the year that y'all got with Demaryius Thomas and we got Dez Bryant.
Yep.
It's like the same player. So.
Oh, we had that bet too.
Yeah, we did.
You remember that?
Yeah, I remember the bet.
You remember the bet?
I got a bet with another Broncos fan. My brother, he was like, "We got the best receiver." I was like, "Okay." So let's put some money on it. So, well, not really money. Basically, whichever receiver scores the most touchdown, the loser has to buy their person the jersey. So,
by December. Yeah, so. All right, that's a good bet.
Yeah. So, hopefully, it works out.
Because it's weapons crazy on both sides. So those touchdowns could be like split like crazy. And you got Drew Luck. He's young. He's still young and inexperienced. So. That's a good bet.
That's a lot of mouths to feed on the offense. Yeah. So.
Safe to say we were both satisfied with how our picks went. But there were a couple of surprises that happened in the draft. Specifically, Jordan Love going to the Packers. The Packers trading up.
Him and his buddies.
So, I'm going to put you in the mind of the Green Bay Packers front office. Not Greg Jennings, not this time. I'm going to put you in the mind of the Green Bay Packers right here, Dane.
For sure.
What were you thinking trading up to draft Jordan Love?
You know what? My name right now is Aaron Rodgers. I am shocked, appalled. I feel like I got punched in the gut 17 times by the Big Show. So this is incompetence.
Just adding the words.
This is incompetence. I I'm gonna steal this. I'm gonna steal this little piece of stat that I've seen online. I've only thrown one touchdown to a first round wide receiver in my career.
That's crazy.
I'm pissed. I don't know that.
So
bold, bro. Like,
yeah.
You, as someone who has, or the Cowboys, we now have the old coach from Green Bay. You know, he won a title there in Green Bay. He was able to successfully transition from Brett Favre to Aaron Rodgers. So to see that this is the crap that he had to put up with the entire time that he was there is kind of like not a reality check, but it's like, dang, so it was really bad. They still doing boneheaded stuff regardless of who the coach is. So sucks to be him, but, you know, You gotta make do with what you got while you got your job, brother.
Yeah, and I don't know, bro. You got Aaron Rodgers still playing at a high level. Mm-hmm. Why not get him somebody to throw the ball to? Y'all were in the NFC Championship game last year, almost in the Super Bowl, and your first pick is let me get a backup for that game.
Well, let me correct you there, Deontay. They actually do have someone he could throw the ball to. They got him in the third round. It's actually a tight end. Not a receiver.
Now I'm Aaron Rodgers.
And it wasn't even a top receiver. It's like a random, like, wait, who?
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Yeah. So that was another surprise. And then in the second round, we already know where I'm going with this. Sorry, Philly fans.
Oh my god.
You got Jalen Hurts from Oklahoma and Alabama drafted in the second round to the Philadelphia Eagles after you signed Carson Wentz to a big contract. After you guys were – okay, let me preface. They got Jalen Reagor from TCU in the first round.
Good pick.
They traded for Marquise Goodwin from the Niners. They drafted a few more receivers that I don't have in front of me. They got some receivers. But – and I read a lot of tweets from different analysts, different people talking about the pick, and they were talking about how they wanted to use Jalen Hurts as a Taysom Hill-type athlete.
That's,
I don't know if you draft him in the second round if you want to do that.
Yeah.
I don't.
That's distasteful. This is a lazy, lazy
analysis. It doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make sense to me. Carson Wentz, you know, Carson Wentz is a professional, top-of-the-line guy. He's never going to tell you that he's upset with the pick.
No.
He's already embraced Jalen Hurts from what I saw already. He's going to be rolling with the punches regardless. I don't think it'll affect him, but I think for the Philadelphia Eagles, you got needs on the defensive side of the ball that you still need to address, in my opinion, at the cornerback position. You got Slay from the Eagles, but, I mean, you got to get somebody on the other side because every corner that they had in that lineup last year was getting roasted, every single one. So if you went and got Darius Slay on one side, that's fine. But, okay, y'all got Darius Slay. Wherever Darius Slay is lining up, I'm going to the other side.
And there were plenty, you know what I'm saying? There were plenty of good corners on the board. Plenty of good corners on the board when they picked Hurts. But, I mean.
Yeah, as a Cowboy fan, I know you're elated. You're like, hey, do what y'all do over there in Philly. Yeah. We'll see y'all boys in September.
Now, it does suck. Because I know exactly how it feels to draft for when your team drafts a player. It's like, man, what the hell is this? But at the same time, I was wrong about the Travis Frederick draft pick. I was wrong about the Leighton Vander Esch draft pick. I didn't even like the Zeke pick when we first got him. So those three players in recent history that I was wrong about because I didn't like the picks at the time, and they've turned out fantastic. So who knows?
Yeah.
This second round pick that they got, it might turn out really well, and, you know, they might forget about all these things. But at the same time, a lot of the way that these contracts are structured in the NFL, they have a way out after a number of years. So that might be the case with Wentz. Yeah. Unfortunately, you don't want to say that as a Philly fan, you might not want to admit that that might be the direction they're going in. But what are the choices they have? Shout out to them for being bold enough to stick into their guns to drafting a quarterback who could potentially have a number of starts based on the health of your franchise guy. But at the same time, I would hope or anticipate that you're rooting for your team for the sake of the team and not for a particular person. That's okay if that's your thing. But I said that because.
And I heard.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I cut you off. Go ahead. I'll remember.
No, I said that because for you to, if there's a lot of people who have been turned off by the pick and say, you know, I'm not rooting for this team and stuff like that, it's like, well, that's stupid. Like, you're going to throw your whole fandom away because you drafted one guy who's not even going to be your starter, who's going to be there to help your starter, who might not even be the starter. Speaking of Hurts, he might not be the starter. But, I mean, you got to do whatever is best for the team. And if you have a guy who has some injury red flags, who has been injured in all levels of football in their life, then you have to do the best to protect the remainder of your team. Don't leave them high and dry. So,
yeah. And, you know, to defend the pick, Carson Wentz has a little injury history. We know he hasn't finished a season healthy since he's been in the league. Am I saying that correct?
No, you got it. You got hurt.
The last four years, right?
He hasn't finished. He hasn't completed the season last year he got hurt during the playoff game, but I guess you can say that he didn't finish the season. Yeah, you're right. He hasn't completed the season yet fully, 16 games. Well, he has completed 16 games last year, but the full season, I guess it's semantics. Yes, for the sake of the argument, he has not finished an entire season.
So I could see them, you know, thinking they need insurance on that end because in the middle of the playoff game last year, he couldn't finish concussion.
Yeah.
They had McCown come in, and he was McCown.
Shout out to Sam Houston's own, Josh McCown.
Yeah.
And he was out there playing on that torn or sprained quad that game.
I think it was torn.
Yeah.
I think it was torn.
Dudes are ballers. Shout out to Josh McCown and the Counts.
Yeah. So I can see I can see in that aspect, but I mean, like you said, we could be wrong about it.
We could be
years down the road. We could be right. So it's just wait and see. But
and that's another thing about rating these drafts, saying like, oh, my team got an A+ on the draft. Like, they might have got an A+ on the selection of the player, but you won't really be able to determine that until 3 or 4 years down the line to see how the contracts held up, how their production held up, if they're a bust or not, and how much do they contribute to, you know, if they're starters or just, you know, just jags. So,
yeah. Was there any other surprises, things that caught you off guard?
Was there surprises that I can think of? Surprises that I can think of. Yes. I thought it was hilarious. Well, no, everybody knew. Anybody who watches Georgia football knows that Jake Fromm isn't the guy they thought he was going to be. But it was funny that there was an article some years back, I guess when Fromm might have still been, he probably just stepped on campus at Georgia. And the article was like, Jake Fromm, you know, number one quarterback drafted in the 2020 draft. And of course, that article floated back up, came back to the surface after he got drafted in the fifth round. So that was kind of fun. Not funny, but it was just kind of ironic because it just shows just how much we overrate players and put so much pressure on these guys at such a young age. And then 3-4 years later down the line, they might not even be a shell of what we thought they were going to be. So got to temper expectations sometimes. But outside of that, I thought he was going to be gone in the third round, but he ended up falling to the fifth. So we'll see how that works for him out in Buffalo.
Yeah.
I don't know about any other shocks or surprises. Is there anybody?
I'll add in. This thing popped up. I'll add in the Panthers just going all defense. Never been done before. Or had it been done a long time ago? I don't know the correct stat. But Matt Rhule coming from – it's not a surprise for me because Matt Rhule is coming from my alma mater and he
– Where is that again? Please tell Baylor, us again.
Hold on. Do I have it? I don't have it anywhere in my room.
Come on, man.
It's on my background. Baylor.
Casual.
Coming from the background, you know, he came from Baylor. He wrote or elevated the level of play of our defense. And he's trying to do the same thing with Carolina. He did an interview with SportsCenter down the line or a few days ago, and he was talking about their strategy is to go free agency on offense, build the draft or build the defense through the draft. They went every draft pick. They chose your boy from West Virginia, Robinson.
They got some dogs on that defense.
Got my boy James, not James Lynch, Bravion Roy from Baylor. They picked Robinson. Who else did they get, Dane?
They got Derrick Brown. They got Yuter Grossmaters. Jeremy Chin. He's basically FCS version of Isaiah Simmons. Troy Pride Jr. from Notre Dame. He's gonna be on NFL Network after football is over with. Like after his football career is over with, he's gonna be on NFL Network as one of like the color analysts. Kenny Robinson Jr. from the XFL. Of course, your boy from Baylor, and then the last guy, Snitley Thomas Oliver out of Florida International University. So
yeah,
they got some dogs, bro.
No surprise. That's what he's trying to do: build the defense. I don't necessarily see the Panthers as a playoff team because that division is brutal.
I got them at 8-8.
8-8. That's not bad. They'll be fighting for a spot too.
That's not bad. I've got them 8-8.
But that was kind of not a surprise, but like a hey there kind of moment.
It was like, oh, this is what he does. Like this, you weren't surprised. Yeah. It's like, oh, this is business as usual. Yeah.
Right.
They had a good draft, though. Like,
yeah.
They had a really good draft. And, So, you know who else had another good draft? Well, I think in my personal opinion, for me, they got the draft MVP as far as getting ahead of ourselves and saying someone did a good job at a draft before we're able to fully evaluate the players at least 3 or 4 years down the road. I say the Baltimore Ravens. So I'm just going to read off real quick who they got. And it's not so much as who they got, but it's like when they got the players. So, of course, the first pick off the board was Patrick Queen, who honestly probably should have been the second linebacker off the board, but who's counting? They got J.K. Dobbins in the second round, which is an absolute steal. Somebody for Lamar Jackson to rely on. I mean, not to say, you know, he can't, you know, win a game himself. He can, but every quarterback needs that guy that they could just hand the rock off to and let them do the thing. So they got that in J.K. Dobbins. Ohio State guys went crazy about that. They got Justin Madubuike from Texas A&M. That guy could probably one, the two, and the three tech. They got Devin Duvernay from Texas. A lot of Baylor fans should be very, very familiar with him as well.
We gotta shut him down, though.
Okay. My bad. Everyone should know about Devin Duvernay. But he's not even my favorite wide receiver pick they got. They got James Prochet out of SMU, which is, I think, is many people should consider.
He bought out.
Yeah. Many people should consider, based on where SMU was, you know, 30 years ago, where they're at now. I think that's pretty amazing. But baby wide receiver U, not saying they are wide receiver U, but consider the people who come from that university, that program, in the past few years, and just how successful they are pushing out those NFL-ready route running wide receivers. But they got some pretty good dogs on their end too, for a good value. So that's my draft MVP. While getting ahead of us, or getting ahead of ourselves, without being able to fairly evaluate the players and the snap counts and the contributors they have to the team within the next 3 or 4 years. So, yeah,
I like it. So overall, we felt like the draft was a success.
Yeah,
kind of had a little nitpicks here and there. We talked about those, but considering where we were or what we thought a few weeks ago, Dane, you know, our concerns was the hiccups. And would you say that you're surprised with how it went and overall satisfied with everything you saw from this weekend?
I am surprised. I love situations like this when I can admit that I was wrong, because it's one of those situations where you're thankful to admit that you're wrong, because if you're admitting that you're right, it's more than likely because it went really bad. So I predicted it was going to be really, really, really bad. Only thing I'd probably change is probably them constantly reminding us the very thing that we were trying to escape by watching the draft is COVID-19. Like, we were trying to get away as far away from that reality as possible by watching just excitement of these players get selected to possibly their dream teams. But every commercial or every, you know, before every pick, we had, you know, everybody who in the medical, shout out to everybody in the medical field that's on the front lines of helping flatten the line for this thing. So, or flatten the curve for this thing. So we appreciate y'all and your hard work and your dedication, spending time with your families and doing what you do best and save lives. Appreciate y'all for that. However, they kept trying to make us like feel depressed about everything COVID-19 related. Like, you know, just that was my only gripe about it, but it was great. It was really good. It was really good.
Yeah.
Shout out to NFL for exceeding my expectations, because I didn't think I'd pull it off. Probably should consider moving forward with this this system in place next year. I mean, even if things are good.
And Roger, he kind of mentioned it, how successful he was, and I think he was kind of surprised about how successful it was. But he had mentioned kind of doing some aspect of virtual in future drafts. You know, they already said Cleveland is next year, and then after that, Vegas will get its bid back because they lost it this year. Maybe we'll see more behind the scenes add some type of aspect of virtual and seeing behind the scenes and access that we got this year. So shout out to the NFL draft. Mm-hmm. It was better than we thought it would be, for sure. And to stay along with the NFL news, Dane, did you get to read that article about the schedule?
About the contingency plan?
Yeah.
I glanced over it, but take and it away and I would chime in. I don't think
okay.
They're not gonna go that route.
for those listening and watching, with COVID-19 going on right now, there is a lot of uncertainty about when and if sports will come back. And I think before I even go into this article, I think that's like like the world as a whole, and then if you bring it down to the sports world, we don't know the best way to put this. We don't know what we don't know. And what I mean by that is we're not sure if this virus is coming back.
Oh, it's going to show up.
We're not
They reopened all these states.
You know, and you got, you got governors reopening states. You got people still getting the virus, you know, even in Texas, close in Waco.
The lack of tests, being number one.
There's just to be short and frank, there's a lot of uncertainty right now. We don't know a lot of things about this virus, and that can only trickle down to sports. Dane says money involved.
But there is money to be made.
These
folks will be damned to delay their precious baby.
Yeah.
For the sake of saving lives.
this article is talking about different meetings and plans that the NFL is meeting about, talking about, which they have to do this, right? Because you have to plan, regardless of what happens. You always want to be a step ahead. You always want to have something ready.
Oh, yeah.
So this particular plan is talking about starting the NFL regular season in October with the Super Bowl in February. The end of February, on February 28th, with no bye weeks, no Pro Bowl, it's basically pushing the season back, but also scrunching the season into a little ball. Like, they're trying to finish everything by February. Basically, it's just talking about different schedulers trying to go through different aspects of it. It's just a small contingency plan. And go ahead, Dane.
You know what this reminds me of, Deontay? Is a saying, this guy, you might have heard it before. He said, anytime you try to win a war, you know where I'm headed with this?
Yes. Innocent people die.
Anytime you try to end a war before, you know, I can't remember how the exact quote goes, but anytime you try to end a war before it starts, innocent people die.
That's Captain Steve Rogers.
And that's almost, I mean, I hate to be dramatic here, but that could very well be a possibility. If all of our brightest minds and doctors have said and have cautioned us plenty of times about if we just handle our business, do what we're supposed to do now, stay at home, and take these precautions, we'll be fine eventually. But if you try to rush back before things are...
Yeah.
I'm not a medical professional. I ain't going to try to say that I am. I'm not going to try to say that I've read these articles. No. But there are so many instances where we can just wait. If we could just wait this thing out and do what we're supposed to, everything will be back up and running. Hopefully. It's way too much at stake, man.
Gotta be patient. Let the doctors do their thing, the professionals. And I agree with that.
Wash your damn hands.
This basically schedule was just a plan. Not much was in this article, but I kind of want to just get your thoughts about that. And what I think about this article and what I think about this situation is, like you said, we got to wait. We don't know.
Nope.
We don't know. I think we'll know more probably by the summertime when they really have to make their decisions on what's going to happen. But at this time, we just don't know.
Don't know what we don't know.
Yeah. We don't exactly. We don't know what we don't know, man. We spoke on last podcast about the G League signing those two top recruits. Mm. And then on yesterday,
what happened?
Yesterday, Dane, what is that recruit's name? Because I don't have it in front of me.
They just said his name on the radio yesterday. I was listening to it. From I just UCLA, know he was going. He was supposed to be going to UCLA.
Yeah,
but homie,
yeah, we don't have his name. We're professionals here, as you can see. We don't have his name, but there was a top five recruit that was originally committed to UCLA, and Dane's looking up the name for me right now. But he decommitted from UCLA. And he signed, or
Deshaun Nix.
Deshaun Nix, there we go. Decided he was going to sign with the G League. And like we said on last episode, we're going to see more top prospects go in this direction.
Mm-hmm.
We see the opportunity to get paid and get seen on a professional level and not have to deal with the inner workings, the NCAA, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. But that instant jump.
Yeah, it's coming.
You know, going straight, coming. Right. It's going to roll. It's like we already seen the trickle effect. You're going to see more top prospects go this route. It's like, hey, I'll spend a year in the G League and get paid $500,000 and go in this next year's draft and, you know, get my brand up there and play against professionals at the same time, get paid, not have to deal with the NCAA. And for them, it's simple math and stuff that makes sense. And you're just going to keep seeing that over the course of the next few months and years until the NCAA does something about it, which this morning.
You need a drum roll?
Kinda see. Yeah, give me that drum roll. So the NCAA is seeing these top prospects go the G League route and, you know, bypass NCAA, decommitting from these top programs. And so Shams from Twitter tweeted this morning, the NCAA says it is expected to adopt new name, image, and likeness rules for athletes starting 2021-22, allowing them to receive compensation for third-party endorsements and opportunities such as social media, businesses, and personal appearances. And this is kind of drawn out. And so it's not official yet, but they're supposed to vote on it by January 2021, if I'm not mistaken. For our NCAA football players, a lot of us read that and hear that and think, oh, man, NCAA football is coming back. They tweeting at EA Sports, tweeting at, you know, people that's in charge there. But we're not there yet. I mean, there's a chance somewhere down the line that NCAA or EA Sports can start making NCAA games. And the reason why, and I can't find that language in front of me. Oh, here we go. I found it. It says, at this time, the working group is also not recommending any changes to NCAA rules to permit group licenses of student athlete NIL is what are characterized as group products, like video games.
Mm.
There are legal hurdles to such activity that preclude it as a realistic option for implementation at this time.
AKA.
The working group recommends that the NCAA continues to explore whether those legal hurdles can be overcome through efforts described in Section 6 so that this issue can be revisited in 2021 or later. So, for example, from what I got from it and by doing a little bit of research. So with our sports groups, NFL, NBA, NHL, they all have unions, right? They're all in a group.
Mm-hmm.
So those group and unions sign deals with the makers of EA sports games like that. The NCAA does not have a union. The student athletes don't have a union.
Can't unionize, so not yet.
Right, not right. Yet. So what the NCAA is saying here, which I there's ways, in my opinion, that it can be done, but NCAA is, we know that we talked about how slow-footed the NCAA is and how they've been set in their ways. So in my personal opinion, I think we will see video games down the line. But NCAA, they're just taking their time with it.
Oh, yeah. They're hoping and praying all these repercussions that or these scenarios and contingency plans don't go the way that don't benefit them, if that makes sense, what I just said, maybe. Basically, NCAA, like, wait a minute. They calling my bluffs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, man, we knew this day would come. We just didn't know it was going to come this soon.
Yeah.
Like,
it's just baby steps, man. And it's, in my opinion, it's a knee-jerk reaction as far as we've been telling the NCAA, like, not us personally, but, you know, NCAA have been receiving a lot of grief about getting with the times. And you see these players, and you're going to continue to see these players make these decisions to not partake in what the NCAA is giving them.
Mm-hmm.
So NCAA is like, hey, we okay. All right, this stuff they've been telling us for years. Okay, let's do this. Let's finally get with the times. Let's get with what we got to do to ensure our product, our players, our prospects stay with us. And so, that's pretty much what I got to say.
Hey, if you add it, you got to add another wrinkle to that, though. You got to add the wrinkle to ... italicize, as well as put an asterisk next to, oh, dang, we got to, you know, this coronavirus affecting not only the lives of our students, but we might not even get athletic seasons coming up. So what is this going to do to our income?
Mm-hmm.
The money that we make off of these students.
Yeah.
I mean, the money
We didn't have 85% of our budget from March Madness come in. We didn't have a March Madness.
Nope.
We losing money left and right. What we got to do type thing.
With the NCAA seasons in jeopardy the way that they are, and of course the NBA talk, and I might be getting ahead of myself, so I apologize, but the NBA considering openings based on the state's designation is huge for a lot of these players that have already committed to the G League. So, the NBA TV subscriptions might be going through the roof if more and more of these prospects continue to make that step about, you know, decommitting from these universities and, of course, going ahead and getting their worth elsewhere. So shout out to them for taking that step. It's a huge leap of faith. And they're all, you know, if anybody's equipped to do it, it's certainly these young guys.
For anybody asking what this ruling means, there is a list of bullet points I'm going to read that kind of breaks it down to make it easier to understand. So it says, according to a source, the working group intends to recommend the following possible changes, and the possible changes are in quotation marks. So it's allow student athletes to make money by modeling apparel as long as that apparel doesn't include school logos or other school marks, which kind of goes back to the point of video games. I mean, you can't have an NCAA football game without the schools and their logos, right? Allow athletes to make money from advertisements. Athletes would be allowed to identify themselves as collegiate athletes in advertisements, but would not be allowed to reference the school they attend or include any school marks in the advertisement. Okay. Prohibit athletes. Now, this is the prohibit part. Prohibit athletes from marketing products that conflict with NCAA legislation, such as gambling operations or banned substances. Individual schools would also be allowed to prohibit athletes from marketing products that do not line up with school values. So the school still has a say in some of the stuff, too. Allow athletes to hire an agent to help procure marketing opportunities, so as long as the agent does not seek professional sports opportunities for the client during his or her college career. And then finally, require athletes to disclose the details of all endorsement contracts to the athletic department. The working group would recommend further discussion about whether a third party should be involved in overseeing the disclosure in a way that prevents endorsement deals from becoming improper recruiting incitement. So to that last one's kind of talking about having a recruiting advantage over like a big school that can offer these endorsement deals and so on and so forth. But it's a slow first step from the NCAA, Because they're pushing this thing to January 2021, man. This should have been done years ago. So they're moving, but they're in quicksand.
Yep.
They're doing it. So, I mean, it's a move in the right direction, but they're moving slow. They're moving slow.
It's cool.
Anything else you got to say about this one, bro?
No, it's good to see this finally taking place. I mean, only people who are going to be shaking in their boots are these. Well, because I'm sure this doesn't happen. NCAA bagmen, I'm sure that's not a thing. It doesn't exist. But I'm sure those guys are pretty, oh, man, what's going to happen? And then, of course, you got your opportunities to go. So take advantage of that, or, you know, could end up like James Wiseman if you don't. So,
man, James Wiseman. On our last episode, we previewed what to expect from the Last Dance Chicago Bull documentary. Since that episode, there's been 4 episodes. And man, oh man, every Sunday at 8, I'm glued to my TV. Ooh. I'm telling Karina to you know, hush. Not really. She watches it with me, which is pretty cool. And I know Niecy watches it with you.
Oh, yeah.
And, so episodes, we'll talk about episodes 1 and 2 first, and then try to get into what happened in 3 and 4. So, from what I can remember, episode 1 kind of echoed Jordan's, and before I even go into that, Dane.
Spoiler alert.
Kudos, yeah. Spoiler alert. If you haven't seen The Last Dance,
if you haven't seen it, don't listen, don't watch, just.
Yeah,
don't do it.
I need a spoiler alert button sound to play.
We all know how it ended, but seeing the journey and the detailed intricacies of all these interviews and just the footage is totally worth it. So if you haven't watched it, please do not listen or watch this yet. Do yourself a favor and watch it. My bad, bud. Go ahead. Take it away.
You good. But I was going to say, before I even talk about the episodes, what I've already enjoyed about how they set this up, and shout out to the producers, directors, people worked on this doc. It's not your typical documentary. It's not chronological.
Nope.
They will take you to a certain part of the Bulls run, and they'll mention something like Jordan growing up. Later on, they talk about Pippen, and then they'll go all the way back to when they were born, their early life. So it's like it jumps in time, and it gives you more in depth about each. Yeah, it works perfect. Whoever's idea was it to do it that way, it's perfect. So you kind of get a back and forth jump between Jordan early years and the how he grew up, and then in college. And one particular thing that caught my eye and ear from the first episode was it talked about Jordan's drive, his willingness to be the best. And then they go back in time, him growing up with his brothers and his father. And it was talking about how his dad kind of favored the older brother. I can't remember his name, but favored his older brother over Michael. And you know, Michael was talking about how he always fought with his brothers to be the best in everything they did.
Literally.
And I think
him and Larry used to go at it.
Right. And so it talks about how his dad kind of, you know, hey, Michael, you know, Michael wasn't really not the best. He was just kind of shooing them off. And you see Mike wanted that, not that attention, but
he wanted his acceptance.
Right, his acceptance. And so that was only a small little crevice of what built inside of him to be like, hey, this is who I am. I'm about to drive to be the best. I'm about to grind hardest. Nobody's going to beat me. Nobody's going to do this. I'm going to show my dad wrong, I think, in my mind. I don't know if he ever came out and said it in the doc, I'm driving this way to prove my dad wrong, but that's what I got from him, because he mentioned how he was always fighting with his brothers to be the best, and I think that small part of him drove him to continue to drive every day and be the best, continue to be top of the line, elite at everything he did. And so I like how that part of the documentary was kind of emphasized and brought to light. Another part, and then I'm gonna let you talk about certain stuff, Dan. Scottie Pippen, where he came from,
man.
And this dude was a manager for a
ball boy, glorified.
Small time manager, small time, and I didn't even know this. And that's one of the things we talked about last episode, is learning things that we didn't know about certain people. We know about Jordan, but going behind the scenes and getting how they came to be. And, you know, we talked about how we were little kids. Mm-hmm. And so all of this is coming together, and learning these things has been amazing. But to go back to Scotty, he was a manager for this D3, whatever, small school. And he grinded and got him a scholarship, grew like 7-6 inches. I don't know how many it was, but grew and bought out and earned himself a first round pick. That's the true underdog story that they show you for Scottie Pippen. And then you see that later on in the documentary during that last year where he got hurt or whatever, or his salary was the salary he was underpaid.
Dog.
He had signed like he signed a 7-year, however many deal. It was still top 10, but being locked in for so long, the salary changed, everything went up.
And he was stuck in nobody but the owners, and they weren't trying to hear it. The old dude said, "If you've already been paid, I don't want to hear anything."
Right. And so they had the owners on the dock, but the GM Jerry Krause passed away a few years ago. But that's that, like showing him coming from that underdog story of GM, and then comparing that to now how he was still underrated, underpaid. It kind of connected that underdog mentality of Scottie Pippen and who he was. Mm-hmm. I mean, Scottie Pippen still was one of the top 50 players of all time, and. Yeah. He continues even to this day to be underappreciated, and it kind of connected with that underdog value. And that's one of the things I liked about the first two episodes. But what about you, bro?
I appreciated one of the things that I love the most is watching movies that have anything to do with a concept of time or space-time continuum, anything like that. So, Interstellar, Inception, just stuff like that, where you have to balance where someone's at in their journey and understand how it fits into the plot of the movie. I really appreciate that. So the way that they have been, or the way that they did this documentary, where, they detail something from the present, then they go to the past, and then mm-hmm. they go back to the present, then reference the future. And from the future, they reference the past, which is the present of the documentary, which is so amazing. I don't know how much time or how many people that they needed to write it out in such a way, from from videos or footage that we haven't seen, that hasn't touched the light of day. But they did a magnificent job with that. I really appreciate the honesty is what I like so much. I haven't caught anybody in a lie yet, but they caught Isaiah Thomas in a lie, but we'll probably get to that later. But yeah, the one thing I love about documentaries is you have to be honest, especially if they're everyone. Well, unfortunately for Jerry, everyone's alive, it's hard for there to be a lie to continue. And especially if there's, you know, more than five people associated with it. And this, you know, the key players, you know, we have Michael Jordan, you have Scottie Pippen, you have Dennis Rodman, you have plenty of coaches, a lot of the remaining roster, a lot of those guys are still alive. So a lot of what they're saying, it matches up. So I appreciate that. Just the not knowing, we grew up in the 90s, but much of what we know from basketball is, you know, the Bulls, Michael Jordan. Yeah, that's pretty much it. As far as championship basketball is concerned, we know a lot about the Bulls. And I had no idea, you know, I know a little bit about Dennis Rodman because he's, you know, from this area, but I didn't know anything about Scottie Pippen's story. Like, his father, you know, being confined to a wheelchair. And then, of course, his brother having, you know, to deal with the same thing. Like,
that goes back to him with the contract he was signing. He had said in the doc, man, he was just trying to take care of his family.
Yeah.
And he didn't know whether, you know, how long he would play. You know, injuries happen all the time.
Nobody knows. He was trying to
secure finances, because a lot of people were getting on Scotty like, hey, man, how could you do that? And at the time, that was a top deal.
You mentioned that, too, how much he's underappreciated. He himself was thinking from a lens of, I'm not larger than life. I'm not going to, you know, be in this league for 20, 30 years, you know, or 30. That's a bit exaggerated, but you get the point. He knew his role. He knew his role. He was humble about it. So for him to come from the perspective that, I don't know what tomorrow's going to bring for me, I need, you know, security now. And that's anybody who's anybody knows that if they're underpaid based on, you know, the contract that they were issued yesterday, we are all human. There's nothing wrong with wanting to be paid your worth. If you have a problem with the player not being paid their worth, maybe there's something wrong with you. So,
yeah.
And that applies even today. So we're seeing, and that's the sad thing, we're seeing contract negotiations in the way that some of these players are being paid peanuts in the 90s, and we're still seeing that crap today.
Yeah.
Not so much in the NBA, but still the NFL. But, of course, the NFL is dragging behind the NFL. The NFL is dragging behind the NBA anyways. But one another thing that I appreciated was just how much Michael stressed his work ethic. Like, just how much he stressed his worth ethic. A lot of people believe just because, you know, 6'6" and, you know, lean and he's smart, they think that the scoring titles and the defensive accolades and the status that he has, that came from that. That dude worked his butt off. Like, and not only in that, but if Dennis Rodman highlighted just how much he worked in his craft too, with the art of rebounding. Yeah. Like who?
That was crazy.
Like, and that's the part that I was most right now. That's the part I'm most fascinated about. Like, to be considered a nutcase and a wild card, but you're that intelligent to perfect a craft like that. Like, that is, Dennis Rodman's probably one of the most amazing so far. He's probably the most amazing part of the documentary to me, just based on the Fortnite bender. Like that.
Right,
man. That alone.
Let's go ahead. Let's get into those next episodes.
That alone was amazing. So,
episodes 3 and 4. Overview before we break it down.
Oh, yeah.
Episode 3, I believe, talked about the Bad Boy Pistons and then Rodman, and then episode 4, Morley talked about Phil Jackson and Phil. I didn't even know some of those things about Phil.
Phil was a wild boy.
Man, Phil was a wild boy too. Which kind of explains why he's so cool now.
Yeah, he's relaxed.
Now I don't have the exact figures in front of me, so forgive me if I'm wrong. But I know. Episode 3 explained Michael's, after we got into the playoffs, his continuance going up against the Detroit Bad Boy Pistons. 2 years in a row, got knocked out by Isaiah Thomas, John Sally, Bill Laimbeer.
Wait, Isaiah Thomas still in the league? Damn. That might have went over somebody's head.
That Isaiah Thomas tweeted, he's like, man, y'all need to mention me. Like I was guarding Mike. I was like, dang, that's funny.
People really, I mean, they both look alike.
Yeah. They both short.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, bro. Nah, you good. Yeah, he went against those Bad Boy Pistons with Bill Laimbeer, John Sally. And every time I see John Sally,
it's like, whoa. Because
Carino's like, haven't I seen him before? I was like, yeah, man. We watched Bad Boys a few months ago.
He was a hacker.
She's like, oh, yeah. Yeah. He was like, he had the glasses and stuff on the computer.
And then he stood up and pointed at Martin. And Martin was like.
Yeah. But they were Mike Storm of getting over the hump, obviously. They had the Jordan rules, which was basically a set of rules they used against Mike to basically get him out of his game, to get him struggling, things like that. But Mike basically had to get through the Pistons during that era to become who he is, to get on
to earn that.
Right. And so episode 3 kind of breaks down how Detroit went through Boston before Mike got there. Boston was, you know, Detroit Pistons thorn in the side. And they were known as the Bad Boy Pistons because they were NBA rules back then were nothing like they are now. They allowed them to body guys, be physical. Literally, you see footage in the documentary of them
getting
checking guys, elbowing, putting guys in a full Nelson almost. Yeah. And the ref's just like,
what?
You know,
this is normal,
right? Right. That's just how it was then. So the Dennis Rodman was a part of that team as well, and that's when they go in the history of Dennis Rodman and him. He went to a small school in Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. His story was kind of similar to Pippen, not in the sense of, you know, childhood, but growing, you know, signing or going to a small school, growing a few inches during the summer and balling out, earning him a spot in the league.
Yeah.
And, you know, when they went into Rodman and you learn stuff, a lot of people said on Twitter and social media how he was the first athlete to have load management.
Yeah.
And that term load management came from Dennis Rodman.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, we talked about how the documentary hops from different time points. So I'm scrambling along talking about it here because it was so much. But it started with Dennis Rodman during that championship run. So we're back into 97-98. It talks about how Mike needed Dennis Rodman because Scottie Pippen, he was chilling. Scottie was like, I'm not coming back. I'm letting my knee heal. I'm done. Cause
back to Jerry the contract. Krause, yeah. Back to the contract.
Jerry Krause, and even before the contract, Jerry Krause, the GM, had said, this is the last year. Phil Jackson is gone, and Mike had already said if Phil was gone, he was gone.
Yeah.
Like, Jerry Krause was basically saying, I'm cleaning house. So in Scottie's mind, he was like, hey, you already wrote me off anyway. You don't need me, so I'm not doing anything right now.
Yeah.
And, of course, later on, he comes back. But at the time, he was like, I'm cool. And so Mike, you know, they interviewed Mike present day or whatever, and he was talking about how he needed Rodman to step up because he didn't have Scottie there. And so I like how they mentioned how, and I don't even know if it was in the doc or if I thought of this. So
I'll let you know.
It seems that what Dennis Rodman, what he, I wouldn't say feeded on, but what his mentality and his mental state was, he needed someone to need him.
Yes.
And what I mean
was in the documentary. Yes.
It was in the doc. Okay. And what I mean by that, Mike telling Dennis that, hey man, I need you to step up. It's like, okay, I got people depending on me. I got the team depending on me. Elevated his game, elevated his play. I think there was a certain part where, okay, maybe I'm getting it mixed up. I think Pippen had came back at that point where he went into his 4-day whatever, low management. But for the most part, Dennis Rodman fed off the attention. His psyche was more invested in being needed. That's how he thrived. Yeah. When he was needed, that's when his game elevated. And I think at that point, Pippen had might have came back. Yeah, that I think I am remembering right. Pippen came back from his hiatus. And at that point, they had mentioned how Dennis, his play declined when Pippen came back. So that kind of goes
back. He kept feeling like the third string of the odd.
Right, out, the third wheel. Know.
But right. little did he know that the man, the myth, the legend himself, Michael Jordan, not to be confused with Michael B. Jordan, I also seen the last 2 weeks, which is pretty amazing. But little did he know that Mike needed him just as much as he needed Mike. So,
yeah,
like, beautiful documentary so far, bro. Like,
yeah, it's
been mind blowing.
It's been good. And then,
favorite part?
My favorite part so far of the doc.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man, that's a good one. I should have put that in my notes.
I got you. If you need to choose. My favorite part of the documentary was after, Phil, basically the way that he and Dennis Rodman connected was amazing. The way that they illustrated that was amazing. But when Dennis needed his time away, his load management, when he, came to the team, he was like, I just need, but he said 72 hours, right?
I think he said 48.
Okay. He said 48 hours. I need 48 hours, just to, get my mind straight. And for him, that meant, just going out to Vegas, being in the scene, drinking, probably doing some other illicit things. Right. But my favorite part of the documentary so far was when he was AWOL more than 48 hours and Mike, had to go basically to Las Vegas to go pick him up. So when he got back, they were trying to, Coach Phil was trying to condition him. But of course, you punish one person, you got to punish everybody pretty much because, that's how accountability works, or that's how accountability worked in the NBA back then. I'm not saying it doesn't work now, but that's how it worked back then. So they, making them do this running activity to get them conditioned. So they're all doing, it's like a pace run. One person, I believe how it goes is the person in the back. The
Indian run.
Yeah, the Indian run.
Mm-hmm.
And the funniest part about it is Dennis Rodman trolling the hell out of him. And instead of, they all communicated they were going to be going at, basically a walking pace. And this fool, Dennis Rodman, just sprinting, full sprinting. And just would let people know that he didn't need the conditioning because he could turn it on and turn it off just like that. And that's to me, that's the most fascinating thing about the whole documentary is like you have this person that's people assume or see as this sort of outcast nutcase guy. But he's really like phenomenal when you think about it. Just think about anybody who's thinking about, I'm sure they've, consumed their fair share amount of alcohol or whatever you may, whatever the case may be. And, the effects that it has on you after, hangover. This man did that and then some. There's no idea what else he did in 4 days. And then after that, he was completely fine. Like,
yeah,
that's not the person to mess with. You leave that person alone because they have their left and their right brain or whatever. They're nervous. They got their whole thing figured out. So I thought that was pretty fascinating to me. That was my favorite part.
And to kind of go what you said about Phil, what other coach would do that? Like, what other coach would let a player, one of their top players, go off? Like, hey, all right, just come. I don't think you see none now. That's like you'll never see that again, in my opinion. Like,
nah,
that's just a Phil. That's what Phil is. Phil was.
You need that psychological safety net, and that's what Phil. I'm assuming. That's what Phil offered to his players. Like, you have that with me.
We talked about Isaiah Thomas and, Mike finally gets over the hump in 91, knocks the Pistons off in the Eastern Conference Finals, to go into the NBA finals. And then you see the Pistons walking off the court, not shaking hands. Isaiah got ripped for it then, and he's still getting ripped for it now. He even came out and said something the other day on Get Up on ESPN about not knowing the implications or how it would affect it now. And even Mike said in the documentary is BS. Mostly everybody except Bill Laimbeer, who hates Michael Jordan, kind of said it was BS. And it's BS. Isaiah, the what he had said then was, or what he said in the documentary was like, nobody back then shook hands after they lost.
There's video footage of that.
They showed footage in the documentary of Mike the past few years shaking a hand after he lost, walking on the court, saying they were the better team, all that. Isaiah was just mad. Just say you're a sore loser.
Just butt hurt, bro. Just say that. Just be. People will respect you more. They probably will love you more for saying, you know what? Got my ass kicked and I didn't want to shake hands with my competitor. The same guy that you had you and your team that took pleasure in knocking out of the playoffs or preventing from getting to the playoffs for the past umpteen years. So,
yeah,
get this shit out. You got to be able to take it.
Yeah. So, yeah, man, Isaiah, load a bull.
Come on,
basically.
Z. You know better, G.
Load a bull. One other note I have in here, Dane, and it kind of goes into the next couple episodes of the documentary. They showed a bunch of interviews of Mike after games, before games, practices. And, you know, they were talking to him about Pippen coming back, if he was retiring.
Damn.
And it showed him working with the media a lot and talking to the media. And I don't know if I'm weird for saying this, dude, but I told Karina when she was right there watching with me, I said, man, I said, Karina, this, I see Kobe. Like the way he was, the way he, his mannerisms, the way he was speaking to the media, the way he was saying certain things, certain quips.
Mm-hmm.
It was just Kobe to me. And I thought, I was like, you know, we always, Kobe always talked about how, you know, every kid emulated.
Yeah.
Mike wanted to be MJ.
He took it to the next level. He took it.
Yeah, you can see
the,
it.
The way he walked, the way he shot, the way he, like, everything. The, like you said, the mannerisms, the fadeaway. You can definitely see it in the fadeaway. The post game, everything. Like, now I'm going to have to go back and look at his interviews.
Man, go watch episode 4 again. I think it was episode 4. Like, all the little interviews and stuff that he did. It was just like the way he talked, like everything that you've seen or you saw from Kobe when he was in the league, when he was interviewing, that's the part I'm talking about in particular. It was just like, I was like, wow.
But you know, the craziest part about that though, Bud, is the very thing that we're describing and saying that's so amazing is the very thing that people used to knock about Kobe. Like, all he does is do like Jordan.
Yeah,
he's like literally the one of the best to ever do it.
Why not emulate the best? Yeah,
like is that your knock on? Like I never understood that, but
yeah,
but that's a good point. I'm gonna go back and watch the interviews, watch some Michael Jordan interviews, and then go watch some Kobe interviews and see just how much of it he could keep. Yeah,
and then I don't know if you saw the preview for next week. It's gonna have a lot of Kobe in it. So that's going to be, of course, tough to watch, but it's like, and you'll probably even see it more in this next episode.
Yeah.
But man, it's next episode is going to be tough.
Yep.
But honestly, I probably would shed a tear, but at the same time, I'll smile because it's like, man, we had the opportunity once again to see another great, or he blessed us with what he does, and you know, later on in his life, we talked about it, how he grew to be an amazing father,
larger than life than what he,
And so, once again, I don't blame you.
Once again,
it's just gonna go back to the emphasis of enjoying greatness while we have it
Give them their roses while they are alive. That's from All the Smoke with Steven Jackson and Matt Barnes. They always say they want to give people their roses while they're alive. I remember mentioning on another podcast. I couldn't remember where I got it from, but it was from them. So,
yeah. But if you haven't seen the doc yet, I hope you weren't listening to this part of me.
Oops.
A lot.
I mean, even if you haven't,
yeah. I mean, they won't see you got to watch it if you haven't.
Yeah.
Just because it's just so much stuff. And like for guys like us that were born in the early 90s and
we didn't know about a lot of this stuff
that happened.
We get a refresher on pretty, for me, I'm going to be 100% honest. I get a refresher on pretty much 97 moving forward. Cause before that, I didn't care nothing about no sports.
Yeah.
97
Cartoon Network.
Yeah, I was trying to be a Power Ranger back then. You smell me? Yeah. Like
another cool thing to watch is, I don't know if you've seen it, but Scott Van Pelt Sports Center comes on right after the doc, and each time the last two weekends he breaks down the episodes and he has people come on and talk about the episodes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, he had John Sally come on last time, and John had a lot of stuff to say. John Sally, actually, he had mentioned, because Scott Van Pelt had asked him, he's like, man, what were you thinking, you know, when the old no handshake thing was going on? He said he told Chuck Daly, the coach, to put him back in the game because he didn't want a part of what Isaiah Thomas and those guys were doing, because those were the guys that were on the bench.
The core.
That took off early. Yeah. And so John was like, man, I'm staying on the court. And so John, he and I guess the other guys that were on the floor, they actually shook hands with Mike and all the guys. So it wasn't every single Pistons player. But yeah, they have I think they had Michael Wilbon and a couple of those people that covered, you know, during that era. But it was really insightful to watch and listen to. And Scott Van Pelt is, I love him anyway. He's one of the top ESPN guys that I like. So that was pretty cool to watch and stuff. But yeah, man, please watch those.
Do yourself a favor and watch it. Watch it with a family member, a friend, or a spouse. Unless it's somebody that lives with you, watch it. Because I ain't trying to encourage you to break this whole social distancing thing. That's not cool. But yeah.
And then my buddy that I told you was a production assistant on the doc. Mm-hmm. From our area, I reached out to him and he did reply to me, and because I wanted to try to get him on the pod, he said he was gonna have to wait. I don't even think I told you this yet, but he said he's gonna have to wait to the last episode. ESPN has all this stuff going on. Obviously, that makes sense. So hopefully, we can have him come on and down the line when the doc ends, and that'll be cool to kind of talk to him and get his insight on different stuff like that. But anything else you've been watching, video games you've been playing, stuff you want to tell the people to talk or to check out?
Then just playing a lot of Madden. Today I started the Call of Duty download again. This will be my second time downloading
the 200 gigs, right?
Yeah, like 170.
That is nuts, man. I was really thinking about buying me a external hard drive, but I'm just like, is it worth it?
Just wait for the next system. It's just not. Don't even do it. I'm just doing it because I needed to, in between the weeks of our franchise, you know, because when there's like lag between the two, I was like, let me play something else so I'm not mad and out.
Yeah.
Shows that we watched. Let's see. You're not a Breaking Bad guy. You've never seen it, right?
I watched the very last episode when it aired live. And so I haven't had interest to watch the series yet.
So that was the only episode you watched?
Yeah. I watched the first episode a couple times when I tried to get back into it. I know.
This is for all our viewers. Please don't grow up to be like Deontay and neglect one of the greatest shows that have ever been created. But
no.
My recommendation for you, sir,
if you never watched the show before, you put yourself in my shoes and you saw the last episode.
That don't matter because of this. I wasn't even referencing Breaking Bad to watch Breaking Bad. I was referencing Breaking Bad so that you can watch Better Call Saul, which is a spinoff of Breaking Bad. I said all that to say this. We finished watching the spinoff of Breaking Bad, where the last episode aired 2 Mondays ago. So we finished watching it because we didn't realize the entire season started back in January, February, the season that we're currently on, was season 6 of Better Call Saul. But to understand Better Call Saul and appreciate Better Call Saul, the best thing you can do is watch Breaking Bad, even if you've already seen the ending of it. Doesn't matter. Still top five. No, it's top three. One of the best shows that I've ever watched, Breaking Bad. You're doing yourself a disservice by not watching it. Not even going to talk about the fact that you haven't even finished The Umbrella Academy, which I'm sure you haven't. But Breaking Bad, you should watch it only because you should watch Better Call Saul after that, because it's amazing. Well, of course, watching Insecure.
Same. Trying to think of shows we watch. We've been watching The Office. Community, I love. I don't know if you would like that. You might like
Community. I already watched Community, man. We talked about it back in college, man. Get that nip.
Yeah, my bad.
You good. The only other thing we watched, we're starting to rewatch The Wire right now. We're still on like episode 3 or 4. Well, my wife, she's actually probably watching it right now without me. I told her before.
Nice.
Doing that. Teaching her how to play chess. So she's learning how to play chess. I taught her all the way all the pieces move.
Chess club, elementary.
Yeah, man.
Karina asked me that the other day, actually.
Actually, elementary, middle school, and high school.
Yeah, she doesn't know how to play chess either. So
show her to play chess, G. Yeah. And by show her, I mean beat her every single day in chess until she gets good enough. Yeah. Let her think that she's going to win, then beat her again in chess. And that's basically how it'll work. That's what I'm going to do. She's going to lose every time she plays me. In like a few years from now, I'm going to let her think she's going to get real close to beat me, and then I'm going to beat her again.
Small thing I forgot to mention, Dane, and I'll tell the listeners. I know it might have been last podcast or the episode before that. Black Widow got delayed.
Again?
No. That time. But since we last talked about it, the MCU slate as a whole has, like, the new dates for it have been announced. So Black Widow's coming out November 6th of this year. Eternals has been moved back to 2021 of February 12th. Shang-Chi, May 7th, 2021. Spider-Man 3, I think they moved that. So this is an old one. But Thor, Love and Thunder is February 11th of 2022. And then you got Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness, March 25th, 2022. Black Panther 2, and then Captain Marvel 2 in May and July of 2022. So still a lot of shuffling going on. Of course, whenever the movie theaters come, when everything's clear, hopefully it'll be by November when we can get this MCU slate kicked off.
My movie theater.
Still no announcement for the shows,
though. Said they coming back in July.
Of this year?
Yeah, that's... Even though Texas is opening up, you know, movies and stuff, Cinemark said they're slated to come back in July, if I'm not mistaken, if I read that right.
Anything else you got, bro?
No. Probably try to go get some gas before, you know, everything returns back to normal this Friday.
That's smart. Smart decision. Smart decision.
No, I haven't filled. You know, the last time I filled up my gas tank was, G?
When? I can't even tell you when I did. So I know it's been over a month for me.
The last time I filled up my gas tank, March the 17th. Mm. Now I have a Nissan Altima, man. So it's not.
I think I last filled up in February, and I'm not even joking. Mm. It's crazy. At the end of February.
Yeah. It's just because only time I've been using my car is just to. Been going to the store or just driving around.
We had our groceries delivered yesterday. Like, that's how much we went out the house. So
we stopped doing that so we could leave the house. That's the only time we left the house. So we're being very cautious over at the Beasley residence. Certainly not, you know, doing anything reckless. So gotta be careful.
We hope you guys continue to, like we try to emphasize every episode, continue to abide by the social distancing guidelines. Do what you have to do to flatten the curve, man, so we can get back to how we do. And, you know, going outside and not necessarily shaking people's hand, but seeing people and not having to worry about, you know, catching something and just do your part, and hopefully we can get through this thing as soon as we get the, I mean, some governors have given the all clear, but the real all clear where we know in our hearts and that we are safe.
you can walk through a sneeze without any type of, oh, I'm going to get sick. Or walk through a cloud of cough and be like, you know what? I might get sick. Whenever you can successfully do, not to say that that should be, you know, I'm of course exaggerating here, but I think once we can walk around without gloves or masks, I think it'll be fine. Whenever all the notes have been taken off the doors of all of the establishments, I think we'll be good. But I don't know when that's going to be, because we gotta do better as a people. Chris, y'all gotta do better, because I'm staying in the house unless I gotta go to the store. So.
Right. If you are watching this on YouTube, you can see our social media handles are now under the picture you see here. If you're listening on Spotify, Apple Music, Pandora, iHeartRadio, Overcast, any one of those platforms, my social media handle for Twitter and Instagram is at DEPSRightSteps, and Dane's Twitter handle is at DaneBTX. You can follow us on Instagram, our actual podcast on Instagram and Twitter. And I'm gonna try to add more different polls and stuff and start taking questions from people on social media and start answering those on the pod.
Okay.
I think that'll be a good idea to get
a little fan involved. Mail action.
Yeah, a little fan mail. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram, our podcast at Duo SNS Podcast. And we're still working on that website. Our social media, our digital content person is Karina, and she's been having a lot of work to do. So hopefully we can get that going at some point, and it could be a one-stop. You can click on our website, have all our episodes on there. We're going to be looking kind of official. So with that being said, my guy, I believe this was one of our best episodes, man.
Sorry.
Content.
Sorry.
You know, I always got to big us up a little bit. You know, but I like how you keep us grounded at the same time, that yin and yang going on. But if that's it, man, great episode. Continue to do what you got to do, like we said before, to flatten the curve. And we'll catch y'all on the next episode.